we were also drawn into interesting ways in which the brain is plastic and is able to do all these intelligent tasks with very minimal resources. So in a way, our problem is kind of holistic in a sense that we are not just looking at one piece of the puzzle. We are looking at how to design the next generation of AI algorithms that are biologically inspired and are able to solve some real-world tasks in the most energy-efficient way. For that, we also need to design better hardware or better systems.
This is the IndianNest podcast, stories of success from leaders and changemakers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together. Because every story is so unique. I'm so very excited to have Dr. Dharisha Kodidupudi with us today. She's the director of the Neuromorphic AI Lab at the University of Texas in San Antonio. She's also the director of the Matrix AI Consortium. Prior to this, she was at the Rochester Institute of Technology for 13 years as the director of the Center of Human-Aware Artificial Intelligence. I invited her on this show as I was very interested to learn about her journey over time that has led her to leadership positions in artificial intelligence, which is the topic du jour of our times. Welcome, Dharisha. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Good afternoon, Sanjay. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Dharisha, this podcast is IndianNest. It's basically chronicles journeys of change makers, leaders, visionaries like you. And to do that, we really have to go right to the beginning, the things that really made an impact on them. As a guest prior to this said, the tire marks. And for that, we really need to know a lot about you. So just take us to where you were born and tell us as much as you can about your parents, if there were grandparents in the mix. So start with that, and then I'll ask you some more questions about that.
Sure, Sanjay. I was born in a small village tucked in the southernmost belt of India called Madhav Nagar. It's about 6 miles away from the town of Nizamabad in the now state called Telangana. So the village is really spread out on the two sides of National Highway 9, so with no more than 100 houses. And most of the people in the village are settlers from other parts of the state, at which point it was called Andhra Pradesh as a whole, one state. So a lot of people in the village moved from the coastal belt to make a better livelihood in the small village called Madhav Nagar. And it's a vibrant village and mostly farmers. So we had paddy fields, sugarcane, and it's a little town with where everybody knew everyone's secrets. And I stayed here in this village until my high school. And right after I finished my high school, we moved to Hyderabad. So my dad, I would call him a globetrotting adventurer. His name is Kudithipudi Surya Venkataramana Prasad, a pretty long name, but he has, for the most part of his career, worked in Abu Dhabi in United Arab Emirates. So almost for 25 years of his career, he worked there. And then he retired when he was 40 and came back to India. So he started off as an electrician in an onshore oil operations company in Abu Dhabi and kind of rose up to the level of becoming a foreman when he retired at the age of 40 and returned back to India. And when he returned back, he tried several adventures in India, I should say. He did digital media company, he ran real estate company and several others. But for the most part, over the last decade, my dad has been serving as president for the entire South India for this voluntary organization called Bharatiya Vishya Parishad. And he really gives back to the community, primarily to underserved children or families who do not have adequate resources, trying to give them, for example, artificial limbs or in some cases, nutritional resources, better employment, better housing, and several of other resources that can help them improve their quality of life. I would really call him a giver. And that's what really drives him. In one of our recent conversations, I was talking to my dad. I said, Dad, maybe it's time for you to take it easy at this point. I mean, you've been traveling so extensively. You should be relaxing and spending more time with grandkids. I would love to do that, but I think I find it more meaningful to give back to the community, to do this act of service. I think it's such an innate quality in him. So he would rather go to an event to help these underserved children rather than go to a family wedding. I could see the urge and the eagerness from him to go to these events over other social events that we have in the families. That's my dad. And if I have to talk about my mom is a homemaker. Her name is Laila Rani Kurtipudi. And she's someone who has a vibrant spirit and wears many hats, I would say, because my dad has been always traveling to Abu Dhabi all through our childhood. My mom had to really pull up her sleeves and kind of sometimes play the mom and dad role in the house. And for her, I think the most important thing was to ensure, and she not only emphasized this fact, but also ensured throughout our lives that education is the most important thing. So my mom, Amma, her name is Laila Rani Kurtipudi. She is a really vibrant spirit. She's a homemaker, but I would say that who wears many hats. Because my dad was constantly traveling all through our childhood, he was gone for 3 months and he would come back and stay with us for a month. My mom really had to take the role of both mom and dad when my dad was traveling. And she did that with really great aplomb, is what I would say, if I think back about those times. It's an unbelievable sacrifice my parents have done for us. So me and my brother could have better education and better lives. And as I said, my mom is a vibrant spirit, though. So she was an athlete in this village where we had, you know, less than 100 homes. She was playing badminton and she was driving scooter, which is not very usual for women to do in those days. I would say she was very good at driving scooter once she just went and rammed to the temple wall in the village. But she used to do gardening alongside my dad. We used to have some eclectic collection of roses and we had lawn and fountains in this tiny village. So it was a beautiful garden. And most importantly, my mom really emphasized from a very young age for both me and my brother that education is the most important thing for us. And education meant freedom for her in some ways. The interesting fact is that my mom, she did not pass 10th grade, Sanjay. So for her, I think she realized it, I think, right after that, maybe that is something she should have done differently. So she wanted to ensure that both me and my brother had the best education. And she was with us throughout our childhood, making sure that we went to the best schools, the best programs, any opportunity that came about, she would just pull us in and try to ensure that we do our best. I would say, I think she's been a great influence in that sense. She has been the guiding force in some sense. You would feel that she is pushing you a little hard growing up, but I think she needed to do that. Because just to give you the backdrop of my village, as I said, this is a tiny village with 100 homes, a lot of settler families, mostly farmers. And my best friends got married right after high school. And she wanted to ensure that that didn't happen with us. And growing up, I didn't know that. I was so afraid when my best friend got married right after high school that this is something that's going to happen to me. And my mom was like, no, we are going to move to the city and we are going to give you the best education. So this kind of gives you, like, for her, how important education was and to ensure that her kids had access to this and made the best out of it in some ways.
Usha, there's a lot to unpack if you just are a little patient with me, because there are some significant things that you just said. I presume you know that too. So let's just first start with where you were born. A village of 100 families, mainly coming in from different parts, especially the coastal parts, for a better life. 100 families. When people who have not been to India understand that small cities are made up of a few million people. So just keeping that in perspective. And then also you were there in that village till your high school. Probably going to school in a Telugu medium. Was Telugu medium at that point?
This is a world of contradictions for me in some ways, the world I lived in. My mom, as I said, my mom ensured that we went to the best schools. So we didn't have an English medium school in the village. We had a school, Aurobindo school, that went from up to middle school. So my mom sent us to a Catholic school in the town, which was 6 kilometers away from where we lived.
Wow. So you went to an English medium school. Now, Dad, and this is where I need to understand a little bit. Dad was in Abu Dhabi building a future. You are in the University of Texas. Your mascot is the Roadrunner, right? I think it might apply a little bit to him also from the sense that he was traveling so much. But he was in Abu Dhabi because he wanted a good future for you. He was away, Drisha, and it was basically mom, you and your brother. And mom was, we call it the family maker. You said homemaker, I say the family maker. So at that time, it was just the three of you, and mom was not educated, but she wanted you to have the best possible education. Just think how progressive thinking that she must have had. And obviously, Dad was doing his thing because he's building his life, he's social, he's active. Because I'm also trying to draw the influences to who you are and what ultimately ends up being. So when you were growing up and going to school, did you have friends there in school? Tell us a little bit. And this was in Aurobindo school, right? And you used to...
I went to the Catholic school. We had Aurobindo school in Aurobindo. The village. So,
you went to a Catholic school. Okay.
Yes.
And that was 6 kilometers away. So how did you commute to that school?
Yeah. So the school name is Nirmala Hrudaya Convent High School. And that's the school I went to from my kindergarten to high school. Much earlier, like through kindergarten and up to second grade, we used to take rickshaw to go to the school. And then after that, we started taking the city bus. It's called the local bus. And we were going in the mornings, it would drop us at the school. But in the afternoons, when we were coming back home, there were a group of kids from our village who went together to the school, like my cousins and my other friends. So we all would group together and walk for half an hour, crossing across railway tracks. And this will be a constant theme in my story, crossing these railway tracks. But we used to walk about half an hour to get to the bus stop and take the bus to get back home, which would take 40 minutes to get back home. The school in itself, it provided us some of the opportunities you wouldn't think of growing up in such a small village in some ways. Like the school had not just the volleyball and coco and kabaddi games, but we also had access to play baseball or basketball. Yeah, the school was like once apart from where I was growing up, but in a way it shaped me to think beyond the world I'm in, because we had some of the best teachers who came from Kerala and other parts of the country. And to tell you one example, the school not only provided us opportunities to go to science fairs and debate competitions or elocutions, or you may think of all the other types of sports competitions you can have with any school, but we also used to have excursions not just within the state, but we had these long trips, especially in high school, where one specific one that I remember very fondly is where I went to Delhi, Calcutta, Dehradun, and a few other parts of the country for 2 weeks. And I had the opportunity to meet Mother Teresa in that trip.
How old were you?
I was in my 10th grade at that time.
Okay. Wow. And that was your first travel outside the village in a way?
Not really.
Okay.
My first travel was a flight I took to outside the village. I went to city every summer, or not summers, but maybe for one of the festivals for each year. We used to go to Hyderabad because my aunt used to live there. And also we used to go to Hyderabad to see off my dad whenever he's going to Abu Dhabi. But my first trip was actually, that I remember very well, is to Sri Lanka. And I was in my second grade. And these are kind of the doors my dad opened up for us in a way. He really believed that we needed to see the world. And he used to not only take us to places, but also bring us these books that you wouldn't think would be accessible in a small village. So that really opened up my dreams. And both me and my brother are avid readers growing up.
So he would bring books back. So tell me, dad was gone for how long and then he would come back? Can you just, I'm trying to figure out, how was that rhythm for you at home?
Yeah. So my dad would work in Abu Dhabi for 3 months and he would visit us for 3 weeks. And then he would go back for 3 months and come back for 3 weeks and so forth. And then that kind of changed as we came to high school. He used to go for 2 months and visit us for 3 weeks, because as he was getting promoted, he was able to visit us more frequently.
And he was bringing books, which obviously expanded your horizon. But also with this school, were there courses, classes that you were inclined towards, Darisha?
So I used to love our language courses. You wouldn't believe, Telugu and English growing up. And I used to like science. I really enjoyed participating in science fairs and winning these district level competitions. Math was really a weakness of mine growing up.
Really?
Nobody
would believe that, knowing what they know about you now. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, math was, I struggled till 10th grade, I should say, with math. I used to get really high scores in all other exams. And my mom would be like, what happened? She would forget about this course with all the other exams. And she, what happened here? But somehow after 10th, things clicked. I don't know. It just clicked. I finally understood things. And then I think it was a different story after that.
We want to go back to that clicking. But when you were studying before, was mom or dad ever helping with homework? Or how were you on your own? How was that?
Yeah. So my mom, she was always there when we had like exams or homeworks or anything, science projects or anything we were working on. She would be beside us. She would be making sure that we had proper nourishments.
Nourishments, and support.
And yes, moral support in a way, right? That emotional support. And whenever I used to write something, I wanted to make sure my mom listened to it. And then she was always there in that sense, that support. Not necessarily helping us do homeworks, but more of the moral support. Whereas my dad, whenever he would be with us, he would always be like, I think you worked hard, Beta. You should take rest. You should get good sleep. My dad was always...
Your mom's nudging you, work harder. And dad saying, take it easy. It's always that case.
It's very complimentary in a way, right?
So, yes.
And I needed that, I think. I needed my dad to say that. Whereas my mom would be like, oh, she just started studying. It's okay. She can go on.
Wow. As you were going on in school and in high school, your brother is how much younger than you, Darisha?
Actually, my brother is 1.5 years older than me.
Oh, he's 1.5 years older than you. Okay.
Yes. And my brother's name is Vinay Kurthipudi. And he is Senior Vice President for Global Infrastructure and Operations at TransUnion. So he's been always passionate about electronics, or in general, digital technology from a very young age. Remember I told you my dad would bring these books, but along books, my dad used to also order these electronic kits and manuals for us to build. And my brother
like
was
like Legos and stuff like that?
Oh, yes. We had lots of Legos. And my brother was a tinkerer in the home. He always wants to build and he wants to read a book and try to figure out by himself. He was not as much of, I want to ace this exam. He was more like, I want to build things. And I think getting access to those books and those devices really helped him explore that passion of him further. We used to read Isaac Asimov books. We used to have access to that. So he was like more the sci-fi kid in some way, right? He used to read that, those types of books and enjoyed building up things. And we used to play a lot together in the video games. I think in the middle school, we got Commodore 64, our first computer. So I was doing it more as a competition with my brother when I was younger. And I think he would want the computer for himself, or he would want the Atari video game for himself. And I'm like, no, I want it. So we would fight it out in some ways for it. But my dad used to do a very interesting thing with these video games. Whenever he used to visit, he used to bring us lots of presents. As you can imagine, he's 3 months away from us. He would shower us with gifts. And every time he used to bring these video games, and even if you recall those Swiss Army knives, different variations of it. So he used to bring these, and then what he would do is he would not tell us how it works, or he would just say, go figure it out. And kind of, it was a rush for both of us, like to impress our dad and who would do this first or who would figure it out first. And I think most of the times my brother used to win. And my dad would say, whoever figures it out would get the gift, that game or so. And I was okay with it because I wanted to spend more time with my dad and brother. So I didn't mind him winning in that sense. I think there were very few occasions where I can remember, especially the Swiss Army knife is one thing where I figured out all the pieces in it. I think there was one hidden nook my brother couldn't figure out and I was able to. So it used to be a fun way to learn, I think. It was very creative if I think back about it, what my dad did.
Yeah, I think so. Do you think some of your brother's choices have influenced you also, where he went, what he did?
My brother has always been a strong influence, definitely, in my life. He has been a great support system in ways. Like
academically?
Academically, not so much, to be honest. We had very different approaches. And actually, my brother, after second grade, he went to a hostel, a boarding school.
Boarding school.
Yeah, my mom was very worried about the influences he would have in the village. And if education will still be his top priority.
Right.
If he stays back in the village. So they sent him to a school, which is similar to the concept of Rishi Valley schools. Mm-hmm. Not sure if you're familiar with those.
Yeah.
So he didn't have any exams till seventh grade. There was a lot of encouragement to read books and just understand things.
Yeah.
And whereas here I was in a Catholic school where grades
memorizing
matter a lot, where there are serious punishments if you don't do well in the exams. So he brought back that spirit of learning in different ways, I think. And the
maybe
books,
creativity, more creativity.
Yes. Yes. He would bring that back. Yes. I would say he's the more creative one between us.
So you actually were on both different tracks. He was in boarding, he was in a more creative Rishi Valley, and you were obviously in a more Catholic, a little more regimented approach to things. So as time was going on, and you were also pretty active in sports, yeah, you mentioned, and I'm surprised there was baseball, there was volleyball, there was table tennis. Was there any particular sport that you really took to, or is this just you did all of the above?
No, I really enjoyed basketball. I played basketball pretty well until I broke my leg, seventh grade. And then I started doing running. I had to stay away from basketball court, but I could still do running. So I was doing district level 100 meters dash and also relay running. So I used to really enjoy those.
Anything about sports that a lot of our guests talk about, the value of sports in their lives? And in some cases, it has an impact. In some cases, it doesn't. I mean, what are your thoughts when you think back, whether it is relay? Relay is a team sport. I mean, each piece is as strong as the other, and single track running is an individual sport. But any thoughts of how sports, your thoughts on sports at all?
Yeah, I think at that point, I probably didn't realize how it was shaping me. But if I look back at it, I think there are a few things I've learned from any of these sports I've been engaged in. I think one is enduring through the pain to get to the destination. And I think that there was, I remember, I think, especially in one of these relay competitions, one of our teammates, she got injured as we were running. And when we passed the baton to her, we were, I think, ranked number one until that point. And then when we passed the baton to her, I think we had to basically catch up in some ways because she couldn't cover the distance in the time we were thinking. So the next teammate and the next teammate, how we pushed ourselves that day, that's something I vividly remember. And we've eventually won the first place, but I think the way the team supported and worked towards the goal, whether we won or not is a secondary point, but I think how we work together to make sure that we do not let that set us back in ways. I think those are some of the things I see I use in my career. When I see someone is not able to contribute for whatever reasons at certain points, how we kind of ensure that the group as a collaborative or as a fellowship kind of helps in getting towards that goal. Yeah, I think sports does teach you a lot of things.
Almost all our guests talk about it. And one of the things, conclusions I've come to is that sports has an inherent value. After listening to some amazing people, it teaches you humility because there's always somebody who's going to be a little better than you, unless you're LeBron James or, I don't know, Shaq O'Neal or Tom Brady or something like that. But even they have bad days. So some humility, as you said, one point you made is suffering through the pain, because you did probably suffer through the pain to keep going, because sometimes you just have to go through it all. So I just think that maybe there's something there that we really need to focus on. But also, in many cases, it builds some friendships that probably last for a long, long time, because that's one of the messages that comes across from so many of our guests, because those are relationships that are unfiltered, because there is no agenda, no nothing. It is just unfiltered relationships that get built. I mean, did you build any relationships during those times, Dirisha?
Yes, for me, I think the sports teams I was in was more like a natural extension of my friends from classroom. A lot of activities I had were in school in terms of basketball, or I also used to play coco. And all these were like more a natural extension of the friendship. So the friendships became obviously much stronger. And I think the sense of support and the sense of camaraderie you get from this group, I think it gives you strength in other ways. It didn't matter how well you did in the classroom, because we are in a Catholic school. Just to remind you, Sanjay, how students are treated differently based on how well they studied. Whereas in the court, we were all equals. It didn't matter what your grades were, how you did in the classroom in a way. I think that helped us in a ways to come together more closely and strongly and support each other. And I'm friends with these school friends of mine even till now, and we do regular video calls, and actually we had our 30th reunion last weekend.
Wow, that's congratulations. But those are, I think, the important lessons of this, Michelle. Disha, just one question I had is, who made the decision to send you to this Catholic school? Was it mom or dad? Was a pretty important, I mean, generally you would not see somebody from a village being sent to, I went to a Catholic school, but I was in a large city. But I'm just trying to figure out how was that made?
It's actually a collective decision, I would say, both mom and dad. Both of them. But I'm sure my mom pushed for it a little more. She said she could, because my dad needed to make sure she could handle things back home. he didn't want to add more pressure for her. But at the same time, I think the sacrifice he did or my mom did is mainly to ensure that we got the best education. So it's a collective decision.
But she probably nudged it a little more.
Yes.
Wow. So now, as you're heading towards high school graduation, tell us how things are going academically and what are you thinking, because college is coming upon you. Take us in that, walk us through that journey a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure. So I think right after high school, as I mentioned, we moved to Hyderabad. And it was a big change, running around freely in the open fields every day, eating sugarcane, versus being in a apartment complex was a very different experience per se. But I joined in a girls' college for plus one and plus two. And I was doing academically very well. And right after plus two, this is where I think some important pivoting happened in my career or in my life, I should say. As I was talking to my dad's friends during intermediate, I was really drawn towards going to the civil services. And as I mentioned, till 10th, math was not a strength. And then plus one and plus two, I was doing great. But still, somehow, my heart was more set in somehow giving back to the community. And so I wanted to take the civils path that I thought that was the route to take. And
IAS or
yes,
something like that?
Yes. Okay. So my dad's friend suggested, perhaps you do CA and then give these exams. And then that's usually the path people take, what they suggested.
Go to Kota, the IAS factory that exists in Rajasthan. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I do not know. I know about it now, but at that time, I had no idea.
Me too. I watched the Netflix show. But anyway, go ahead.
So my mom was like, nope, you are not doing that. I was like, and my dad was like, no, that's the path she's interested in. And I think we should support. And my mom is, no, she should choose engineering. I was like, I don't think I'm interested in engineering. And anyway, after these long debates, like she said, no, you should choose engineering. And then I think I've chosen electrical engineering as my undergrad degree, but mainly because my dad is an electrician. And though he's very hands-on, he had like deep understanding of these things. So he used to talk to us about it. So I think somehow that was there in the back of my mind. So I thought, okay, I would like to choose electrical and electronics engineering. So I went to Guntur, which is a few hours away from Hyderabad. I picked a college in Guntur. I could have picked any college in Hyderabad, or I could have gone to other colleges outside the state. But Guntur is where my parents originally are from. And I've heard from my grandparents that education is really good there, very highly emphasized. So I said, okay, let me try this. And my mom said, okay, that might be a good choice. And so, yeah, I did my undergrad in electrical engineering there. And then after that, again, a lot of debates about the next pivot that happened in my life. Again, because this civils and IAS exam, I wanted to do that right after engineering. And my mom was like, no, you need to go to US. And you see this common theme here. And then my dad was like, no, I don't think she's comfortable. Let her do what she wants to do. But my mom is, I think it's an opportunity for her to grow and learn. I think she's sheltered a lot and it helps her grow. I think she should consider this. She really was the one who worked with me in filling those applications to the universities where I reluctantly filled in. And wrote those statements of purpose for my master's. And finally, yeah, I came to US. And that's the same time my brother and me actually came to US in 99. And we pursued our master's. I came to Ohio and studied in Wright State University with my master's in computer engineering.
Sorry, a lot to unpack here, if you don't mind my asking. You wanted to go into civil services and dad was saying, let her do CA. And I'm sure you can figure out there's a pattern here. mom said, no, she's going to go into engineering. Now, mom, from what you mentioned, she didn't get a college degree, but obviously she was very, very savvy. Why was she fixated on engineering? I'm just trying to figure out. That's question one, obviously.
I think in her mind, you either choose engineering or medicine to
doctor
have better...
Doctor or engineer?
That's the two
Indian professions?
Yeah, I think that's what she was familiar with as something that would give you a better platform for the future. In some ways, I think that's really the reason why she pushed engineering, because I was personally not drawn towards going to medicine. She was like, this would be the right thing for you.
Why were you keen on civil services? Just a question. To give back?
Yes, give back. I don't know if that's... I mean, I know now how I draw that influence from my dad. I can see where I get that from. But at that point, I don't know, looking at things, how things were in the village, I haven't said a lot of things about my village. I mean, it's a beautiful village, but there is also every evening, there were lots of discussions in my house about the village politics, about the state politics. My home was like the
village square.
Yes. We were the one who had the color television in those days. So everybody would come watch the news. All my uncles, and everybody was an uncle, close relative in the village, right, in some form. So they would all come and have these discussions, and I would enjoy listening to those. And they would talk about what could have been changed, how it could have been changed, and all of that. And everybody was equal. Like, my mom would join in those conversations. They would occasionally let me also have a voice and talk about how I feel. So I think it was kind of the culture that I was brought up in some ways, like having these discussions, thinking through how we could help people, how could there be some kind of reform, or how. So in some ways, I think that is what probably draw me to think about maybe there are ways in which I can help. And maybe this position is what would help me. Going into civils is a way to help and reform some of these things. And of course, there is that innate thing from my dad's family. My grandpa was like that. My dad is like that. And my dad's sister is like that. They're constantly into giving back to the community in various forms through volunteer services.
So that's been a big influence. And grandfather was also like that?
Yeah, my grandfather, I would call him the Iron Man. Growing up, that would be one of my favorite times, was like when we would go to our grandparents' house in the summer, to all the cousins in the summer. We would spend 2 months at my grandpa's house. Traditionally, what you would expect in a grandparent's house, your grandma is doing all the cooking and your grandpa is playing with you and so forth. But from the time I recall, my grandma had osteoporosis, so she couldn't walk up straight. So my grandpa used to do all the cooking, and he would make sure he's a food connoisseur. So he used to bring these meats and cook them in the chicken and ghee and give us like really these sumptuous meals, and making the idlis and dunk them in the ghee. So everything like was, of course, freshly made, but more importantly, he would bring so much love into cooking and doing that with us. And another quality I really loved about my grandpa, and I think I did not get it, is he was a fantastic storyteller. And we just used to listen to the stories he used to tell us in the night. There were like 4 stories, Sanjay. But every time we went, we know that he's going to narrate those stories, but the way he told those stories was so beautiful that we would be like wanting more and more. Can you tell us again and again? So
it was very visual in your mind when he were telling them. You could.
Yes, yes. The way he would make the sounds when he's narrating, and yeah, those were precious. And he was a phenomenal swimmer. So he would just like in the villages, we have these unlined open wells. So he would just drop us in those wells and tie us with a stalk to the tree and just drop us in there and go figure out, kind of. But he was there, of course, to help us if we kind of sank or anything. But yeah, he was a different.
Truly an Iron Man. Mm-hmm. He was really an Iron Man. Do you think he has influenced you in some ways? In subtly, indirectly?
I think there are two things. These are things that I talk to my kids now occasionally because they want to hear stories about my grandpa. When I was talking to them about him, I realized one thing I see is that not just with him, it always supported doing what is right, even though it's unconventional, or do what you feel is right, even though it's unconventional in ways. So like my grandpa cooking, I mean, that showed his unconditional love for my grandma. I mean, you know how hard it must have been for a meal. It must have been very hard for him, but he never showed it. He did it with so much love. So I think in some ways he has shown me how to have that unconditional love for family. And I think being strong in the toughest times, I think he was able to go through a lot of difficulties in life, but he would not complain. And this is something my dad has too. Like, they're very humble. They do a lot, but they don't complain much. So I think some of these traits
I think you imbibed on.
I don't know if I fully imbibe to the extent they have it. I would love to, but I don't know if I can to the degree they are.
Great to know. Question, any regrets not going into civil services? Now that you think, I mean, obviously, what if, etc. But just if there was a parallel universe.
I think maybe even during my master's or right after my master's, I still felt maybe I should have taken. Occasionally, I had those moments. But now I think after being so far along in my career in this path, I don't have any regrets in that sense. The reason is because this career path of mine gives me the opportunity to serve the community. Not in as direct ways, perhaps, as the civil services would have, but I think I still have a lot of platforms through which I could contribute to the community I'm living in, to serve the community I'm living in. In some ways, I think that desire or that urge in me was, I wouldn't say calmer right now because of the opportunities I have in my current career, but maybe you never know where life takes us. So there
you could still have a long journey ahead. Believe me, you just never know. One quick question. Why was mom so fixated on sending you to the US? Where did she become US aware? Just a curiosity.
We were aware of the US because my uncles and aunts lived in US.
Oh, okay.
So they visited us like once every decade or so at that time. Later it changed. But yeah, so we were aware of US. And also I think in the city, in Hyderabad, once we moved to Hyderabad, she has seen few of her friends' families send their daughters also. Not just the sons, they send their daughters also. So she was like comfortable with the idea by then, I think. She was more like fly, find your wings kind of approach at that time because I was too sheltered, I think. And it was the right thing. It was what I needed, I think. If I think back about it, what my mom did was so crucial in me, I think, in trying to find myself in ways. The first few months were very tough for me after I came here, but I think those doubts faded away after a few months. I was enjoying all the pep talks I got from the seniors or the campus adventures or doing the first job of my own and trying to earn and be financially independent and traveling through US during my master's. I think all of these kind of helped me grow a lot. And I'm indebted to my mom in that sense for pushing me to pursue that master's in the US.
So you came here, Disha, to Ohio, and you said the first few months, obviously, you were coming in from Hyderabad, probably Ohio, change in temperatures, change in a little bit in language and food. So that kind of hit you hard. But then how was the journey overall for your master's? Tell us a little bit about that.
So in the master's, the first 1 week, I think, was the hardest the first week. I almost decided to go back to India again. I was going to get the ticket.
Why was that? Because
just, I didn't know how to cook. For someone you think who grew up in a village, you think I would know how to cook. I didn't know how to cook or do a lot of, except making an omelet. I didn't know anything. And me and one more friend of mine, like her name is Sirisha, and we both were like, oh my, I think we are going to have a very tough time doing this all by ourselves. In some ways, actually, because we just came in a week before the semester started, we didn't have a lot of our other roommates in as well. So I think it was just being in a new country all by yourself and not knowing how to go about with a lot of things, because you already had these doubts if this is the right choice for you. And that just kind of amplified in that setting, I think. And the best thing that happened was a few of our seniors just sat us down one night and gave us like a full pep talk. If you go back now to India, you will never enjoy the freedom that we are all experiencing now. And perhaps you do not understand what we are seeing right now, but we ask of you to give it one quarter. We were in a quarter system. So just give it one quarter and then see if you still don't like, you can always go back. But give it just one quarter and see what happens. And then we were like, oh my God, that was the best decision to me to stay back. And
the point not to
yes.
leave.
Well, yes.
That's good.
Yes.
So how was the academics, Durusha? You were doing what, electrical engineering, computer science?
I started off in electrical, but I changed to computer engineering after the first quarter because I really enjoyed the hardware software design concepts. So academically, first quarter, I struggled to get good grades just because of lots of adjustments. But after that, I think once I understood the system is very different from what we have experienced in India, but you cannot just cram in the last week or before exams and do well. But I think I've really enjoyed taking courses I want to take, the choices I had. And in ways, I would say it just help me enjoy the process of learning. So I think master's was great in so many ways, not just academically, but I think for me to grow as this well-rounded individual who's always sheltered in some ways to focus only on the academics or the other aspects I'm interested in. But whereas here now I have to take care of all the other aspects and make sure everything work seamlessly. And the roommates I had were great mentors, I would say, for life. And again, these are great friendships that we still stay in touch. And again, I'm going to have a reunion with one of these roommates from my master's next week in India.
Wow.
So, yeah. So there are some deep friendships that are formed during this time.
So how did you navigate? You started in electrical, then you moved to computers. And then you move towards AI. How did that transformation happen? Just walk us a little bit through that.
Absolutely. When I finished my master's, I had no plans of going for PhD. I thought this would be my last course, last exam, and then I'm going for a position in industry. Right after my master's, I started working in industry for 6 months. And I just realized that this is not fun. This is not giving me joy. I worked as a software analyst and I'm like, I do not want to do this for the rest of my life. And that's when I was thinking, what did I enjoy during my master's? And I definitely realized this intersection of computer science and electrical engineering, which is what computer engineering is. But there is a lot of system design, hardware design, computer chip design. I really enjoyed all those courses. And I aced them and I took one neural networks course in my master's and I really enjoyed that as well. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should pursue an advanced degree in this area. And that's when I applied for PhD and I applied for a PhD in electrical engineering. By the time this decision was made in my mind, it was already late for the application cycle for so many universities. And there was like nobody in my immediate friend circle or family who has ever done a PhD. I was like, I thought the process is very similar to master's at that time. And I just went ahead and applied to 3 schools, which had still open or rolling deadlines. And I joined at UTSA in the master's in electrical engineering. And actually, I was the first PhD student to graduate from their engineering program at UTSA. And during my PhD, my focus was really on designing these computer chips. And specifically, my focus was on how do we ensure that these systems, computing systems, are going to be energy efficient. I was really drawn towards that problem of designing systems that are energy efficient. And I graduated and I continued in that path for 1 year or 1.5 years. And then I realized, I think these traditional ways of looking at it or solving this problem is not going to cut it. We really need a fundamentally different architecture in order to solve this energy problem. So that's when we started really looking at designing computing systems that are biologically inspired or inspired by the brain specifically, processes that we observe in the brain. We started looking at literature all the way from 1800s in some way and kind of started tracking this path. And there's been this consistent theme across scientists who are saying that there is a lot to draw from the human brain, specifically when you're considering robustness, resiliency, and energy efficiency. So then we had to kind of again start looking at designing these systems in a different way, started talking to a lot of neuroscientists in understanding the brain better at that time. And then we started designing systems and architectures that are biologically inspired. And we at the same time started looking at new types of devices that could help us in designing these biologically inspired systems. So in a way, my approach to or my journey to AI or the way I came into doing AI research is really drawn from the fundamental problem of designing energy efficient computing systems. And as we were looking at the brain as a source of inspiration to design computing systems, we were also drawn into interesting ways in which the brain is plastic and is able to do all these intelligent tasks with very minimal resources. So in a way, our problem is kind of holistic in a sense that we are not just looking at one piece of the puzzle. We are looking at how to design the next generation of AI algorithms that are biologically inspired and are able to solve some real-world tasks in the most energy-efficient way. For that, we also need to design better hardware or better systems. So we are looking at that, at the design cycle in a holistic way.
That's amazing. Drisha, you touched a little bit, and our guests talk a lot about the role of mentors in their journey. Mentors come in many different shapes, forms, parents, grandparents, professors, bosses, colleagues, etc. What is your view of mentors per se in your journey or just overall?
I think I had lots of mentors throughout my life, but really I'm a person who learns through emulation. So I think growing up, it would be my mom and dad and my grandpa, my brother. But I observe the environment around me. There are amazing advisors, not only just in academic advisors, but also there is a lot I draw from my students. For example, I consider them also as my mentors. There's one specific, I don't know if it is in the context of mentorship, but there's a story I wanted to share. I think that really has a huge impact in some ways in how I do things because of what I've observed in my early childhood. So remember I told you when we were going to school, we used to take this bus from the village. There's one rainy season when there was this heavy rains and then there is this one bridge that we had to cross from the village to go to our school. And one morning we all woke up and we heard that it is flooding the bridge. So we all went from the village. We all walked and it was like 2 kilometers from the village. So we went there and we were standing on the bridge. And then suddenly the bridge started shaking. This was built during the British times. And we all ran away from the bridge and it collapsed right in front of our eyes. That meant that we couldn't go to school for the next how many ever months. So what people in my village did, these youngsters, some of my cousins and several of the members in the village, they said, oh, let's build a bridge. They brought all these bamboo sticks and they tried to build, once the flood calmed down in the next 2 days, they tried to build a wooden bridge. This happened on a Friday, so they tried to do something for our Monday school. And obviously that didn't stand, so it broke. And they spent nonstop 36 hours or 48 hours, I cannot recall, working on this, and it broke. And so that meant on Monday to Wednesday, other members of the village kind of walked us through the railway tracks to the school. So we walked the entire 6 kilometers, but it's now longer because we are taking the railway track to get to the school. And people like rallied up to support. There would be different members who would pick us up and drop us and all of that. In the meantime, these youngsters, they were like, okay, this bridge collapsed, but these kids need to go to school. And there are also other things that they need to do, right? People need to sell the milk or sell their vegetables in the town. So they needed a way for people to traverse through that. They built these floats out of, again, stocks. And there were only like 4 people who knew how to swim well. This was fearful. The water was very strong, the waves, but I think there were only 4 people who could swim through that kind of, through those conditions. Those 4 people were working nonstop for the next, I don't know, month to help us get from one end to the other so that we could go and pursue our education or others could pursue their livelihood. So the reason I say this is it just, I think, that sense of camaraderie and coming together to solve when crisis happens, how people came together to solve and giving to others without thinking about themselves. I mean, keeping others first. All these things I think I've seen growing up in various instances as a child growing up in this village. So I think I would call all these people as my mentors. All these cousins, uncles, aunts who have helped during these crisis times as my mentors, they've shown how to live a better life. They could have all said we could just sit back and do nothing about it and wait for some government officials to do something. But instead, they said, no, we need to make sure that we help our kids and villagers to continue with their daily lives. I think these kind of mentors have more, I think, strong impressions in your childhood.
Yeah. And as you said, they come in many different shapes. And you said even some of your students are your mentors, which is a pretty interesting point. Drishya, if I were Drishya, who's just thinking about the civil service exam versus engineering, what would be advice if you look back that you would give to me, that is Drishya, the young Drishya, who's kind of torn between civil service, engineering at that point, knowing what you know? I kind of asked that question before, but I just want to hear it a little bit.
Knowing what I know now, what would be the advice to my younger self?
Yeah.
I would just say, take it easy. It will all come through in different ways, but just to take it easy would be my advice to my younger self, not to just be so disappointed if some opportunity didn't work at that time, just to still take it easy because there are other doors that would open up.
So maybe just not be so stressed or worried and just take it easy. That's an advice given by a lot of people. Drishya, towards the end, we have these short lightning round questions, which we want just quick answers from you. This podcast is called Indianness. Can you give us your definition of Indianness?
So Indianness for me is, I think if you recall this saying from the Mahaupanishad, Vatsudaika Kutumba, I think that's what really stands out for me from when I think about India or my roots in ways. I just strongly believe we are all connected in different ways and we are one big family. I think that is what really comes to my mind, Sanjay, when I think of Indianness.
And that's a good one. One connected in many ways, but all one family. Drishya, one person either in India or of Indian origin living, not your family, who inspires you? One, because I know there could be like 20, but one.
I think the one person that stands, that is a role model, kind of, I would say Dr. Anant Agarwal, who has created the edX platform. He was a great researcher in my field of interest at one point, and then he pivoted and built this platform that kind of democratizes education today. He's very inspiring.
A great one. One person, again, Dvisha, not two, who has been the most influential in your journey? One.
My dad.
Your dad?
I think he always said to live a life of purpose. And I think for him, that purpose was giving or is giving. And I think, yeah, I would call my dad my hero in that sense.
Dvisha, is there a movie or a book that has impacted you in any way? Your life, choices?
I don't know if I would call that this book impacted my life choices, but this book is something I really devoured as a kid.
Okay.
The entire Sherlock Holmes series.
Everybody loves that.
Yeah, this story has helped me to become more observant and analytical about your everyday life. And just that fascination with those minute details and all of that that Sherlock puts in that in those stories, I think it was like, in a way, it's a form of science.
Dvisha, Nike's tagline is just do it. Other companies have other taglines. If you had a tagline, what would it be?
I would say decoding the world with kindness.
Decoding the world with kindness. That's a great one. I need to think about that. That's a new one. That's a great one. Great one. Dvisha, there's a lot more, but we obviously want to be cognizant of your time. Maybe we'll have you over for another journey, but this has been phenomenal. One thing I would want to just emphasize again, that master's program, you feel that's when you really blossomed out, right?
Yes.
That was your blossoming out. You came into a big environment, different freedom, all those things, made a big impact.
Right.
Great. This is amazing, Dvisha. Thanks so much for being so open with your journey, the challenges, and what an amazing journey. And what an amazing journey that's going to continue, and we'll be following and looking forward to staying in touch.
Thank you, Sanjay, for listening to my story.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Indianist Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.